This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 135.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got a great interview for you with Jeff C. Now, Jeff is the host of the Manly Pinterest podcast, amongst other things. And the reason I wanted to get him on the show is because he is totally dominating a niche, and that's Pinterest for men. And one conversation I just seem to have with my clients so often is one that's around fear of specializing, so fear of niching down. And it's usually about the fear that if I niche down, that means that I'll be missing out on opportunities. And Jeff is certainly somebody who isn't missing out on opportunities because he took a bold decision to niche down. In fact, he has so many opportunities available to him. So I thought it would be really, really great to have him on the show. And also, as a bonus, he shares loads of great Pinterest tips as well. But before we get to the interview, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about our new sponsor, ResponseSource. So ResponseSource is a media inquiry service that puts journalists who are looking for help with stories in touch with people who want to be featured in the media. So that's people like you. And if you subscribe to ResponseSource, you'll get dozens of emails in your inbox every day from journalists from the likes of the BBC, The Guardian and Grazia magazine. So there's no need to write press releases or pitches to journalists. You simply reply to the messages in your inbox. Now, using ResponseSource has resulted in some fantastic coverage for the clients that I work with. And one example that comes to mind is Kate Beavis, an expert in vintage style who's recently been featured in the Daily Mail, in Top Sante magazine and the Metro newspaper, simply from replying to a few emails. So if you'd like to find out if ResponseSource could help you to get press coverage for your business and have a free trial of the service, then head over to responsesource.com/Janet Murray. That's responsesource.com/Janet Murray. And I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. And now on with the main part of the show. Joining me on the show today is Jeff C. Now, Jeff is a social media expert, a speaker, and the host of the Manly Pinterest podcast. And I stumbled across his work a few months ago when I was looking for podcasts about Pinterest. And I was immediately impressed by how he'd taken an online niche, that's Pinterest for men, and was just totally dominating the space. So I just had to get him on the show to talk about that and also share some tips with us on Pinterest. So welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks, Jenna. I'm so excited to be here today.
So might you be able to start by telling us a little bit about your story and how you got started?
Sure. I have had I'm in Longview, Texas, here in the United States, and I've had this digital marketing agency for almost 13 or 14 years. And then a while back, I decided, I need to do this social media thing that I've been telling my clients to do for so long. So I started, really putting some time and effort into kind of building my brand. And I started, of all places, on Google Plus, because there was actually a big kind of insurgence there at Google Plus, and got in with some great people. And that's kind of when the live show thing started, the Google Hangouts on air, and everybody was doing kind of a live show. And I wrote this blog article. It was called Manly Pinterest Tip Number One. And it was about how I was able to, on Pinterest, share a secret board with my daughter, and only her and I could do stuff, and we'd pin things. She'd pin things she wanted to try for dinner, and she would pin like craft stuff. And so it was a kind of a cool thing, and I wrote a blog post on it and called Manly Pinterest Tips Number One. Well, people really liked it, and it kind of took off. And then somebody said, hey, Jeff, you ought to do a Google Hangout show about Manly Pinterest Tips. And I thought, well, okay. And so I found, just through relationships online, five other guys, and we had never met in real life, who wanted to do this show with me, and they had a lot bigger followings than I did. And so we started doing this show called Manly Pinterest Tips, and we were able to interview people like Guy Kawasaki. We interviewed a Hollywood producer, and then people in the social media space, and it was a lot of fun. And we did really well, and we did probably 13 or 14 shows altogether. And then we did one called The Manly Show, where we talked about stuff other than Pinterest, and that was a lot of fun. And then I relaunched as a Manly Pinterest Tip show as kind of a I do a live show and a podcast, and it just it took off. It did really, really well. It actually got me on the social media marketing podcast, which in my niche is very, very big. That's Michael Stelzner's show, who does the, you know, the social media marketing world, which is a huge thing. And that led to me being asked to be a speaker at Social Media Marketing World. And I'm going to go back for my second year this year. And then I'm also now, I run the Pinterest and Instagram and do a lot of video stuff for Social Media Examiner. I'm part of their social team. And so they're one of my biggest clients now. So it all started from this little show where I decided, you know, it kind of is tongue in cheek, this, you know, Manly Pinterest thing, because then it was really, everybody thought Pinterest was for women, especially here in the States. It's a lot bigger stigma. And I thought I'd have fun with it. And it just took off, and it really paid off for me. And I've been riding that train ever since.
And, you know, I think that was that Social Media Examiner podcast that I think I first heard you on, actually, when I was looking for tips. So it shows that this stuff works, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It's pretty amazing.
There is this perception, and I think it's actually borne out in the figures, that Pinterest is mainly used by women. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, originally it did. And there's really a difference between, like, here in the States, there's a lot more women on Pinterest initially. But in some of, like, in Europe, it wasn't such a big, you know, there wasn't that big of a separation between the two. But, yeah, it was really lot of there's a lot of wedding dresses when you went on, and there was like nail art and how to braid your hair. And I know guys went on that and were like, hey, I am not going to have anything to do with that. But right now on Pinterest, the male demographic is the fastest growing demographic on Pinterest. It actually has more users than subscription to GQ and Sports Illustrated combined in the United States. So it's really not that way anymore. And they've done some things on Pinterest with the smart feed. So like for me, I don't see much of any of that stuff that doesn't interest me anymore. They have an algorithm that kind of shows you what you have been pinning in the past. And there's tons and tons and tons of stuff for guys there now. And so I've always been kind of promoting that there's a whole thing that people just don't know about on Pinterest for guys. And it's a really great resource. And it's a great driver of traffic for people who are in trying to do marketing and gained a following on social media.
Can you talk a little bit about how you've grown your following? Because you've now got 31,000 followers. But I know because I interviewed Melissa Griffin back in episode 129. And I know that it's not about followers. It's more about the traffic that it drives to your site. But can you talk a little bit about how you grew your following and the impact that that's had on your business?
Yeah. So what I started to do is, you know, of course, I pinned my blog articles, which was great. And Pinterest is the number one driving of traffic back to my site. And the cool thing about Pinterest is, you know, like, and I'm sure that the lady you had on before talked about this, but you like on Twitter or even Facebook, you post something and it's gone pretty quickly. On Pinterest, it lasts for a long time. I mean, I'm still getting traffic from pins I pinned when I first started. That article that I pinned about my daughter still gets clicks back through it through Pinterest. And so there's this huge long tail thing that people just don't realize with Pinterest. And also Pinterest is, you know, you do a lot of repinning. So I repin a lot of other people's stuff. So my friends and people who I've developed relationships with, I pin their stuff as well. And so there's that reciprocity that goes on that they try to pin my stuff. And then I'm always thinking about my audience. So why are people following me on Pinterest is because they enjoy or find useful the content that I pin. So I'm always trying to give my audience what they want. So I never usually try to repin something that's over a year old, because really, you know, if I would, you know, show this really beautiful infographic of flip phones from 1989, nobody cares. It doesn't matter. Even if it's a beautiful image, that doesn't help my audience. And so I'm always trying to give my audience stuff that they really, really want, content they really, really like and they can use. And I think that has helped my audience grow as well. And you don't have to have a huge following on Pinterest to make a difference. If you're driving traffic back to your site, it's just amazing. In fact, for Social Media Examiner, Pinterest has now become their second largest driver from social traffic to their site behind Facebook. So it's really great for long-term traffic.
I think most people know about Pinterest, don't they? But it's essentially like kind of like cork boards, isn't it? That you pin interesting articles or infographics or images that you found, and you can group them together according to themes.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's some other great things you can do with like what are called group boards that you can get on. Sometimes there are rules. You can create your own. And what it is people kind of like mining pins, like food bloggers get together and they will pin all of, you know, like Thanksgiving dessert recipes. And there'll be a Thanksgiving dessert recipes boards that maybe 100,000 people follow. Well, if you can get on that group board, you have, you know, the chance of all those people seeing your content. And so being strategic in the way you join or create group boards can be really, really advantageous to you as well. My friend Peg Fitzpatrick and I, we actually share a couple boards. One's a bacon board where we pin stuff that has to do with bacon, which is a manly topic. I think it's pretty cool. And then the other thing we do is we have an instant Instagram tips board that's really, really popular. And the cool thing about Pinterest is a lot of those boards will rank on Google. And so I think last time I checked, that Pinterest, that Instagram board ranked really high when you search for Instagram tips. So it can be really well for SEO as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that I haven't exploited until now. I mean, that's why I was searching for that podcast, actually, because I've got quite a big following on Twitter. I've got a big Facebook group. So I've got sort of a big following in certain areas. But I was kind of like, I've got to get onto this Pinterest thing. I'm a little bit late to the party. But so when I was looking for that podcast, I was basically hungry, just trying to find any information I possibly could.
Right.
And I am waking up to the fact that I should be doing this more. And we had Melissa Griffin back in episode 129. But as we've got you on and you're a Pinterest expert, I just want to ask you a couple of things that I asked her, actually, because I think it's interesting to get different people's perspectives. But what percentage would you say of your content should be repins and what percentage should be your own content, do you think?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I mostly pin other people's content and then sprinkle my stuff in there. It depends on, and I think it changes as you grow in followers. I think sometimes the algorithm will shift a little bit. So always experiment with this and see what frequency works the best for you. But I do a lot of repinning on mine because one, I want to keep my audience coming back to me and I want to make sure they keep getting good content. And then also, it doesn't look like you're just spamming your content all the time, throwing your stuff out a bunch. So I probably pin 90% repins, maybe 10% my own, maybe even a little bit lower than that. But the thing is I've never had anybody complain about, you know, Jeff, you're doing too much of your own stuff or you're doing too much of the other people's stuff. And so I think it's what your audience wants and needs.
Well, one of the things I've been using it for recently is I've got a membership community called the Soulful PR Studio. And I help people to promote themselves and to not just in the press, but also in social and marketing and various different ways. And so I've been using it to collect together resources for them, actually. And so I've been directing them to Pinterest board and say, you know, I've put together a board for you on Instagram. I've got a board on email marketing. And here's some stuff I've collected on MailChimp because I use Infusionsoft, so I'm not an expert in MailChimp. But
right.
I've pulled together some resources, which I think actually might be quite helpful for you. And in itself, it's a really great resource, actually, to share with your audience. But on top of that, if you're driving traffic to your site, it's very, very early days for me, but I can see how it could be really, really powerful. Can you talk a little bit about the stats, like how much your traffic went up when you really got big on Pinterest?
Oh, wow. I'd have to go back and look. I do know that it's one of the biggest drivers of traffic. Yeah, it goes up with your followers too, because the more stuff it kind of starts ramping up, but it's almost like a snowball effect. And one of the things you ask about how much content is repins versus an original content. And I think that matters a lot also is how much content you have. Like for Social Media Examiner, that is totally different. We pin mostly all our own stuff because we have so much of it. I mean, we're putting out an article a day and sometimes twice a day. So we have a lot of content. And then I try to sprinkle in like our speakers content and stuff like that. But it depends on your industry and it depends on how much content you're going out. I mean, Social Media Examiner is a media company. And so people expect to see their content all the time when they're searching for social media. So it just really depends. But for the average person, I would say, you know, try to do more repins than your own content. But yeah, and then just, you know, when I took over Social Media Examiner, we have seen a ramp across the year of how much more traffic we have gotten from Pinterest because of the efforts that we're putting into it. And it's being consistent. And I know we'll talk about some of the tools a little bit later.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to ask, which is a bit of a selfish question, I asked Melissa Griffin this as well. But so I have got quite a bit of content. I mean, not on anywhere the scale of Social Media Examiner, but I've got 200 or 300 pieces of content. But because I haven't been using Pinterest, over on my website, I use kind of Facebook-shaped images, basically. And the Pinterest ones, it's the longer ones, isn't it, that work a lot better. They show up a lot better, don't they? And I'm very well aware of this. But for someone like me, and my website isn't set up, I tried it actually. After I interviewed Melissa, I tried it. And I tried out a Pinterest-friendly image, and it just kind of mucked up the layout of my site, and it was kind of really annoying.
right.
And she said to me, basically, you need to go back and you need to make Pinterest-friendly images for all of your content, and, you know, it'd be a bit of a pain in the bum, but it will pay off for you. What would your thoughts be on that?
I would agree, but there's some ways that would make it a lot easier so it won't mess up your blog layout. Because to be honest, the Pinterest layout is a struggle for many, many blogs. And what I use is, in fact, I'll tell you kind of my process for my, and we kind of do the same thing for Social Media Examiner. For my blog, is when I make an image for my new blog post, I make three images, one for Facebook, one for Instagram, and one for Pinterest. And I use the Facebook one will work on Twitter. So what I use is this plugin called Social Warfare, which is an incredible plugin. What it does is when you go to my site and you click on the Pinterest image, it automatically selects the Pinterest image. You don't see my Pinterest image anywhere on my site, really, but it's only when you click that button, it automatically selects the right image to go to the right social network. And it has saved my bacon many, many times. It is worth going back, if you have that much content, is to go and try to make portrait style images. You can use Square, and I've seen some people do that. And some people, you just don't get as much bang for your buck for just the kind of the Facebook style images. I would start with like your evergreen, your most evergreen stuff, and go, okay, I know these work really well, so I know they'll probably work on Pinterest. And then just start pinning those, making some the right kind of images for those and doing that. But yeah, Social Warfare, if you put that on your site, it won't mess up your layout, and it works just, it's awesome. Using that plugin increased my Pinterest sharing probably 75% or
higher.
Wow,
okay. Well, I've already, as a start, I've got my designer to make me 10 Pinterest-friendly images for my most popular blog posts. We're going to start with that. I tried to make one for my latest podcast episode, and it just kind of messed everything up. It looked nice on the page, but then it messed up the front page of my website, and that looked awful. And so with Social Warfare, so would I load up the Pinterest family image in the back of my site as well as the Facebook sized one?
Yes.
Which works fine.
Yeah, it does a great job, and it has multiple. And I actually know the developers, and so they're very, very I make suggestions, and they usually try to implement them, but they. It's a great plugin. A lot of people use it. Paige Fitzpatrick uses it. Rebecca Radice. I mean, some of the big people. And it works really well. You load it up in the back end, and then like when they go click on the Pinterest or Twitter or whatever, it gets the right image just automatically loaded in and sent out. And it really does increase your shares.
Okay. And for those people who don't know, so Fitzpatrick, she's a big social media expert, and she's particularly known for Pinterest, isn't she? And it's Rebecca Radice. Is that how you say it? She's a. I think I heard she was being interviewed on your podcast, and she was saying she'd been playing around with not using Pinterest friendly images or something. I'm pretty sure I remember some kind of conversation like that, and she'd been trying out and say it was working okay or something.
Yeah, Rebecca does. She's always experimenting, and it's always fun to have her on and talk to her about that. Like square images, both her and Peg have played with using square images because, you know, Instagram is really hot for visual marketing, and a lot of my stuff can go on both places with a little bit of creative cropping. And so I know they're always experimenting with that. And it doesn't work as well, but it's not horrible. Like, you know, some of just those small little Facebook images that you'll still see on there every once in a while.
I've been using actually a tool called If This Then That. I don't know if you use it at all, to take my Instagram images, and it puts them straight into a folder, a board on Pinterest, which I think, well, you know, it's some content on there and they're there. So I guess there's lots of little workarounds that you can try out and see how they work, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And, okay, yeah. Ian Anderson Gary is my If This Then That guy. I know you had him on, and I always ask him questions about that too. It's a great tool.
Yeah. No, I've been doing all sorts of stuff with it. It's redirecting. I use Slack for my membership community, and there's a particular hashtag that you can follow to connect with journalists who are looking for help with stories called Journal Request. And If This Then That, you can actually just set that to send those hashtags into the Slack group, which is fantastic. And so I'm a little bit obsessed with if this then that at the moment, so definitely
cool.
Worth having a play around. There's lots of really good things there. So have you got any tips on, obviously, I mean, I'm still at that stage now where I'm creating boards And I have to admit, I'm there sitting in bed at night, like pinning stuff and building up my content and obsessing about the shape of my blog posts and all that kind of stuff. But once you've got things underway, there are tools that you can use so that you're not having to physically pin it all yourself. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yes, there's a couple that I recommend. And actually, Ian was on my show. We talked about some Pinterest tools. The best place if you're using Buffer, Buffer has a great Pinterest scheduler that's good that I've played with before. But my go-to tool, if you really want to get the best bang for your buck on Pinterest, is Tailwind. And Tailwind is a great scheduler. I use that for my own account and also Social Media Examiner's. And it lets me schedule pins. One of the things you really want to look at for when you look at a scheduler is that it uses the Pinterest, goes with any social media network, that it uses the official API. Because the last thing I want to do is use something that is going to potentially harm my account. I don't want all of a sudden, because I'm using some scheduling tool that's not approved by Pinterest, to say, okay, sorry, we're shutting your account down, which would just be devastating for a lot of people. So, and there's a lot of people who use these third-party tools, and I actually used a couple of them when I first got started, that are, I would consider, dangerous for Pinterest, because they either have you use your username and password to use that tool or some other things. So that being said, both Buffer and Tailwind are approved. They're official marketing partners with Pinterest. And so I'm fine recommending those. Tailwind is great for me because it lets me schedule my pins and look at them. They have to have the Chrome plugin so I can actually schedule. Like if I went to your blog and I saw something that was a pinnable image, I could schedule that directly into my Pinterest feed. So I'm always and it does the best times to pin, just like kind of like the Buffer scheduler. And so I just set that up as many pins as like you think you're going to do a day, and I can just put them in a hopper and it'll share my stuff out. And then when I have new blog posts, part of my process is putting those in their schedulers, in that scheduler to go out to my different boards. Like if I have one that I'm talking about Instagram, I'm going to schedule that to go to my podcast board. It's going to go to my Instagram board. It's going to go to my visual marketing board. It's going to go to my social media marketing board. But I don't want to do those all at once. And so I will schedule those out to go to those boards at different times.
Is there anything else that you think it's worth saying about the Pinterest stuff before we just talk about dominating the niche?
I think it's important to have as good as images you can get. Canva does a great job on helping you create the right sized images. And so I use them quite a bit for clients when I need to come up with a quick image. But doing those portrait style images and, you know, working and making them look the best as possible, and then experiment things. There's no reason why you can't have two pins or three pins that you're trying different looks and layouts with that go back to your same blog post or your same piece of content and see which one works, and then, you know, kind of doing a split test on it and then creating more of those that your audience likes.
And is it worth rewriting the descriptions on the images? Because sometimes I notice, maybe it's because I'm a words person, because I'm a writer, but sometimes I see the description on somebody else's pin and I think that's not very helpful. Is it worth rewriting them? It's a bit time consuming, isn't it?
Yeah, if it's a repin, I wouldn't worry about it, because you're not really, that's just for your audience to see. And the return on investment to do that for your repins probably isn't that good. Now on your own, if you say, well, this one really isn't performing like I think it should, then I would go and maybe kind of massage the description on your own Pinterest pin. Also, it's very important with your board titles and your kind of your boards that you write the right description and titles for that. You know, you don't want to have a board that says stuff I like. Well, what does that mean? That doesn't help you at all. So something like, you know, Instagram tips or Pinterest tools for bloggers. I mean, try to be as specific as you can for your board titles and in the description. Pinterest is still kind of mucking right now with the description links. They're always testing stuff, so I can't give you the best length for description. But this, you know, you don't want to keyword stuff, but you want to have it as concise and as clear as possible.
And is it worth sort of having long tail keyword stuff? Because I often think, when I've got a board that's in Instagram tips, and I think, oh God, like, think how many other people have got boards like that.
Right.
Is it worth sort of niching down a little bit in the titles?
Yeah, I think so. Like Instagram tips for bloggers or Instagram tips for writers. I think that would help you niche down, you know, and then you can, if a board's not working, you don't have to just delete your board with all your pins. You can move those pins to something else. You can retitle your boards. And so you can play with stuff that way as well.
Is it worth having personal boards on there as well? So before, I mean, I've recently just started working a little bit on Pinterest for business, but before that, I was just using it for decorating projects. And, you know, if I was doing some decorating at home, I've got a shed at the end of my garden. I remember using it for decorating that and comparing different types of shed that you could buy. And I've now moved those. I've now either made them sort of private or secret, whatever you call it, on Pinterest. Mm-hmm. But I see other people that I follow and they often have personal boards, which seem to be really popular. And I know kind of in the social media space when people kind of want to do business with people. So would you recommend having some that are off business topic, if you like?
Well, see, this is a big controversial topic too. And I think yes on both of those. For like me, for myself, because I'm a personal brand, mainly Pinterest tips. I mean, I share a lot of like manly food, manly man caves, social media stuff, but also, you know, and Peg, and I took my model kind of from Peg because she, you know, she does a lot of social media stuff, but she also does, she has a cupcake board and, you know, so it depends on your brand. Social media, we're pretty, social media examiner, we're pretty focused on social media topics. So there isn't pretty, there's, you know, podcasting's kind of in there, but for other, it just depends on your business. I run a Pinterest for a chocolate factory here in the States and we, you know, it's mostly chocolate recipes, but we share a lot of other people's stuff and it all fits underneath the kind of sweets category. So it just depends, you know, how much you're a personal brand and how much you're just, you know, I'm a shoe shop. These are different shoes. I mean, and it comes down to preference. I always like people to do business with people, you know, that they know I'm not a corporation and they know that, oh, Jeff likes, you know, he's a woodworker. He has all these woodworking boards too. And those are popular. And so it's worked for me, but it's just going to have to depend on what your brand and what you're putting out there for other people to consume.
And I guess with all of this stuff, it's about experimentation and trying things out, seeing what works and being prepared to be flexible, I guess.
Yeah. And I have never had anybody argue with me and say, oh, Jeff, you're sharing woodworking stuff again. Nobody's ever griped about that. And with the algorithm now, I think it makes less of a issue for people who are following them. You know, they can always not follow my woodworking boards and they wouldn't see that stuff.
Yeah, because that's true, isn't it? People don't have to follow all of your boards. They can just follow the ones that are of interest to them. I know that my shed, although I'm very much like a beginner on Pinterest, but my sheds board where I share pictures of beautiful sheds because I've got a she shed at the end of my garden, that's really popular and people repin that. You know, that's really popular in terms of me having a not very popular account. but you know, I can see that that's probably one that's worth me having. And I've actually been featured in the press like loads of times talking about my shed. And most of the people that I do business with, they know that I work from this shed at the bottom of my garden. And it's kind of part of my brand. So that kind of works for me.
Yeah.
And I guess it's kind of just making decisions around that, isn't it? So I wanted to focus really on dominating a niche, because what I love about what you've done is something that I'm always telling my clients to do all the time, is not to be afraid of like dominating a niche and not being afraid of just like putting your stake in the ground and saying, I do Pinterest and I do Pinterest for men and I can still do other things. I can still work with other people. You just mentioned there you were working with a chocolate factory or chocolate shop or whatever it was. But what has been the impact for you of just really kind of stepping into quite a narrow niche? What's the impact been on your business?
Well, it's changed the whole thing. I mean, you know, I used to do websites all the time. I don't do those anymore. I mean, I do what I really like doing. And I remember it was a big deal when I kind of planted the Manly Pinterest Tips brand. But, you know, when I went into it, I was like, there's no way I can compete with a Jay Bear or some of these other people who are her general social media stuff. I said, there's no way I can get in that market. I just know I can't. And I thought, how can I do that? What's my thing? And I, you know, as all good ideas do, I think it came to me in the shower. But I thought, oh, Manly, that's funny, because Manly Pinterest Tips, people will get it because it's a tongue-in-cheek thing. It'll stand out. And I actually grew a beard for it. I have this, it's really, really long now. But I thought, I'm going to try this thing. A good beard takes, you know, like a year to grow. And I said, well, I'll grow a beard for a year. And if it doesn't work, I'll shave it off. And so this is like the third year. It's the fourth year. It's really long. And it's now part of my brand. It's in my logo. And so I can't ever shave. But,
Jeff's got a great beard. You need to check out photos of him. It really is a spectacular beard.
But yeah, it was really nervous to go in. Okay, and I was like, okay, women are going to be mad at me because I'm like in their network. And the funny thing is, I did have one person email me when I first got started saying, stay out of our social media. She emailed me and said that. She was bitter. But that was the only person I've ever had. But yeah, it was just, and I thought, okay, I can do this. And, you know, there was a little bit of joking aside, but that was fine. And doing that is, there's no way I would be able to get on the Social Media Examiner podcast just being a generalist. It would have never happened. But it was because of the brand and the branding that I worked really hard on. And also, when I first started, one of the things is the relationships you make with people on social media. And I see a lot of people jumping in this too fast. They want to dominate their niche like in a month, and that just can't happen. And I asked questions. My whole show was based on, you know, I'm getting into this Pinterest thing. I need to ask questions. And so I had people on and I asked the experts. And the more I asked the experts and had a show and I shared, and I would interview everybody from Guy Kawasaki to a food blogger that somebody has really not heard of, but I found interesting. So I was interviewing people that interest me. I wasn't trying to go after the big guns or the biggest, you know, stars or whatever. It was people who interested me. And asking questions, I think, is the biggest thing. So how in the world did I get Guy Kawasaki on my show, who used to work for Apple and all this stuff, is I became friends with Peg Fitzpatrick, who ran all his social. And the way I became friends with Peg is I would see her on Google Plus or on a show, and I would ask her questions. I wouldn't say, you know, a question and then follow it up with, hey, Peg, can you share my blog post? I would never do that. I would just ask her questions, say, hey, you said this about Pinterest. What if you did this? Would that work? And, you know, and I would always, in the post and in the blog post, I would try to continue the conversation. And I think that's what a lot of people miss, is they go for the ask way too quickly. And if you stop and you try to engage people and ask their opinions and is this a stupid idea, or, and just show up every week and ask questions, they notice you. And that's what I did, is I wasn't a pest and I wasn't a jerk. I would ask questions and I tried, and I did a lot of free stuff. I do a lot of video stuff, and I would put together videos for people. Either I would take their quote and animate it and say, you know, here it is, and kind of showcase them, or they needed something for a start of a show and said, hey, I put this together, what do you think? And they would use it, and then they would push my name out. And so it was a lot of, you've got to be willing to give a lot of stuff away for free and not expect a thank you.
It's just so good to hear you say that, because I've just rebranded my membership community, and I've been doing lots of one-to-ones with my new members over the last few weeks. And I do sense that a lot, that people, they're so eager to get on and be doing things on social media and blogs and whatever, that there's an expectation sometimes that this is all going to happen in a couple of months. And I think, like I've said so many times over the last few weeks, look, this is not a short-term thing. You know, I'm not sitting here saying that you're going to be dominating your niche in 4-8 weeks' time. It could take you a good few years to really get traction on this, but it really will be worth it to stick at it. And it's just interesting to hear you say that about yourself, and that you, and also it's not about you, is it? All the outreach that you've done has been about them, about sort of tapping into their expertise, but also maybe helping people out and just being kind of useful and valuable.
Yeah, exactly. And I always tell people, you know, anything I can do, a 6-year-old could do with 18 years of practice. I mean, everybody wants to be an overnight success, and that doesn't happen. It really doesn't. I mean, you know, it's frustrating to see people who get discouraged. And I think a lot of people stop right before the finish line. And just keep at it. Be consistent. My podcast, when I started it, it didn't have viewers. Like, you know, I'd hear John Lee Dumas' numbers and Michael Stelzner's numbers, and I'm like, there's no way. But it did what it needed me to do. It got me the jobs I needed it to do. It got me the connections I needed to do. And people email me with, hey, thanks, I really enjoyed, you know, you heard me on a podcast.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, keep being consistent all the time is really one of those. And, you know, the hardest part is, you know, just showing up. And I think, you know, people who show up kind of reap the benefits of it later on.
Yeah, and it's so true about the podcast. I've had my podcast now for just over a year, 14 months. And I've just got a sponsor, which is really exciting. But
congratulations.
It's just great, you know, but that's taken me showing up twice a week. You know, I go out twice a week and finding guests and, you know, doing all the production and actually, you know, looking after the production costs myself, really, for the first year, which is not cheap. But I just had this belief that if I just kept going, I just kept putting this content in front of people, then, you know, it would start to gain traction. And I now feel a year in that I'm seeing my downloads like go through the roof, but it's taken a year to get there. Right. And when I say through the roof, I mean through the roof for a business podcast. I'm not talking but you know, I'm really seeing the traction, but it's taken a good year of just showing up and almost not being afraid to think, well, maybe nobody's listening, or, you know, maybe not many people are going to download this. And I think that's something that I'm very, very conscious of sharing that with people, that there aren't really any overnight successes. And another thing I just wanted to pick up on that you said was about engagement, because I've been working on growing my Twitter strategy quite a lot recently, and I'm a bit disheartened by how many people that you follow and you just get this auto DM back or auto tweet. Yes. And it says something like, hi, thanks for following me. That was my attempt to kind of go into a half American accent, which is not very good. It's like, hi, thanks for following me. That's a bit more
that's
like
pretty
it.
Good. That's pretty good.
And some of my family are Texan actually. And I kind of find myself just kind of feeling really turned off by that. You know, somebody just sort of saying, thanks for following me. Can you please like my Facebook page? Or thanks for following me. What did you have for breakfast? Like, seriously. And us Brits, I think we find it a bit much. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I think us Brits, our threshold for stuff like that is a bit like, so I've been forcing myself to reply to people and say, yes, I had porridge for breakfast. and just kind of trying to keep in the spirit of it. But I think it's something about being sincere, isn't there? And I don't do DMs or anything like that when people follow me, because I just would rather go and send somebody a personal message. It takes more time, but for me, that just sits better with me. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I've seen a lot now also on Instagram with the auto replies, like, hey, we really like your profile, come check us out. And it's the bots that just are driving me nuts, because I try to engage on my account. And also I run the Social Media Examiner one. So I'm always going in there trying to ask questions. So, you know, they'll say, hey, you know, something about social media. And I'll say, well, why do you think that? And, you know, and always try to continue the conversation, I think, is the best way to build engagement. One of the things on Twitter, somebody did, her name's Eileen Smith, and she's a kind of a YouTube live video person here. And I remember one time I asked a question on Twitter, and she sent me a video reply on how to do it. And I'm just like, that is that. And I'm like, so I'm friends with her for life. You know, I'm just like, she went out of her way to do that. And that, and I always talk about her because of that. And so going those extra steps to do something for somebody who asked a question, or to serve them in some way. Oh my, you make super fans. And, you know, they always say that you can be successful in business if you just have 100 people who like what you do. And I really believe that if you can be sincere and help like 100 people, then you'll never be looking for work.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate it. You've shared so much good content and useful stuff. You've really served us and served the audience. What's next for you in your business? And where can we find you if we want to know more about you?
Next, I'm starting to put together some training materials on Pinterest and some other things, you know, live streaming. And also, I'll be at Social Media Marketing World, if any of you guys are going to be there. I know Ian Anderson Gray will be there speaking this year, and I'll be there as well. So if you do happen to go, make sure you look me up and say hi, because I'd love to talk to you. And you can always find me at manlypinteresttips.com, where we're always adding testosterone one pin at a time.
And that really is the intro. I just love it. I have to say, I listened to it over and over again a few times because I liked it so much. It really is a fab podcast. I stumbled upon it by accident. And also, the thing I wanted to add is actually, although it's called Manly Pinterest Tips, it's not manly, is it? It's just great Pinterest content. It's fantastic.
And it's funny because I don't always talk about Pinterest stuff. Like, we had a food blogger on last week, and you know, I try to always bring it somehow back to Pinterest. But like I said, I want to talk with people who interest me, and I think my audience will find value too. And so it's not just Pinterest stuff. We talk about all sorts of visual marketing and social media stuff there.
Brilliant. So go over and find Jeff and also have a look at his really great beard, because it's absolutely fab.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come over and join my Facebook group? It's simply the Soulful PR Facebook community, and I'd love to see you there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.